break your head personally!
Tully sneered.
Shit!
Maybe not, but you goddamn well better believe I'll give it my best shot! Move!
Tully moved, startled by his intensity. Fish caught up a minute later. He exchanged glances with Smed, said, "There isn't anybody behind us. Slow down while I scout ahead." He went. 2 minutes later, he signaled all clear and Smed slipped into the killing place. The smell of death was in the air already, though not yet strong. Fish growled outside. Tully responded with a snarl but clumped inside. Smeds eased down the cellar stairs and was surprised to find the death room still illuminated by the stubs of some of the candles that had been burning before. Nothing had changed except that the corpses had stiffened and relaxed again, and a roaring swarm of flies had gathered, working their eyes, nostrils, mouths, and wounds. Tully said,
"Oh, shit!"
and dumped whatever was in his stomach. "I've seen worse," Fish said from the doorway. "And there's just a bare chance this scene here could get worse. Sit down in the chair, Tully."
"What?"
"Sit down. Before we get to work, we have to talk about who got into the money Timmy kept in his bedroll." Tully started, went pale, tried to bluster.
"What the shit you trying to pull, Fish?"
Smed said,
"Sit your ass down, Tully. Then tell us how come you gotta be stealing from Timmy and mooching from me when you just made the biggest hit of your life."
"What the hell are you?"
Fish popped him in the brisket, pushed him into the chair.
"This here is serious business, Tully. Real serious. Maybe you don't realize, maybe you haven't been paying attention to what's going on. Look around. Come on. That's the boy. See this? This was our pal, Timmy Loken. Just a sweet, happy kid you conned into thinking he could get rich. These other guys did this to him. And they were gentle as virgins compared to some of the people who are after us. Look at them, Tully. Then tell us how you've been dicking up, being too damned stupid to be scared, too damned dumb to sit tight and wait the storm out."
Malevolent rage filled Tully's eyes. He looked like he was thinking about getting stubborn where stubborn was pointless. Smed said,
"You're a screw-up, cousin. You had one damned good idea in your whole damned life, and as soon as we get to work on it, you gotta go and try to mess it up for all of us. Come on!
What did you do? Are we all in a hole?"
A flicker of cunning, quickly hidden.
"I just made a couple bad bets is all."
"A couple? And you lost so much you had to go stealing from Timmy?"
Tully put on his stubborn face. Fish slapped it for him. "Gambling. You dipshit. Probably with somebody who knew you from before and knew you didn't have a pot to piss in. Tell us about it." The words came tumbling out, and they did not disappoint Smed's suspicions in the least. Tully told an idiot's tale of bad bets made and redoubled bets laid, then doubled again and lost again, till, suddenly, here was Tully Stahl, not only broke, but behind a stack of markers that added up to a bundle. And the boys holding them were not the sort to laugh it off if he reneged. So he'd had no choice. Anyway, he would have paid Timmy back out of his share as soon as they'd sold the spike, so Fish cut him off before he started justifying his idiot behavior. Smeds knew was coming, and knew if Tully went at it, he would turn the whole thing around so it was all their fault. He asked, "How much you still owe Tully?" That hint of cunning again. Tully knew they were going to bail him out.
"The truth!" Fish snapped.
We're going to cover you, yeah. But one of us is going to be there to see you pay off, and then you're not getting a copper more. And you're going to pay back every bit with interest.
You can't treat me like this.
You don't want to get treated like an asshole. Don't act like an asshole.
Smed said,
You act like a spoiled brat.
Fish continued, You'll get treated a lot worse if you screw up again. Come on. Let's get to work.
Tully shrank from the menace in Fish's voice. He turned to Smeds in appeal.
Smeds told him, I'm not getting killed because you can't understand why you have to act responsible. Grab Timmy's legs and help me carry him upstairs. And think about the condition he's in next time you get a wild hair and go to thinking about doing something, like anything.
Tully looked down at Timmy.
I can't.
Yes, you can. Just think about what if somebody else was to find him and figure out who he was and who he hung around with. Grab hold.
They moved the bodies upstairs, then waited for nightfall. Fish knew a place not far away that would be perfect. Some low ground that turned marshy when it rained and bred diseases. The Imperial engineers were using it for a landfill. One day, the bodies would lie 50 feet below new streets. They took Timmy out first, of course. He represented the greatest peril. The man who had been questioning Timmy went next, then the thugs, with the little one going last. Tully and Smeds did the carrying while Fish floated around watching for the grays or an accidental witness. It went beautifully. Till the last one.
Somebody's coming. Fish breathed.
Move it.
I'll distract them if they spot us.
Chapter 49 Toad Killer Dog was amused by his companions in misfortune. So eager to spend themselves in the digging, yet so loath to do what had to be done to ensure their strength. After 4 days of increasing hunger, he killed the weakest. He fed and left the remains to the others. It did not take them long to overcome their reservations and revulsion. And that quickened their determination. None wanted to be next on the menu. But the digging took another 8 days. Only the monster himself came up out of the earth. But that would have been the case had the digging taken only an hour. He escaped the darkness of underground into the darkness of night. The trail was not hard to find. It had not rained since the hour of the Limper's perfidy.
Ha! Headed north again.
He began to trot. As he loosened up, he stretched himself more and more till he fell into a lupine lope that left a dozen leagues behind him every hour. He did not break stride till he had crossed the bounds of the Empire and had come to the place where the Limper had encountered a major obstacle. He stopped. He prowled and sniffed till he understood what had happened. The Limper had not been welcomed back with tears of joy. He caught something on the breeze, cast about, spied a distant black rider armed with a flaming spear. The rider flung that blazing dart northward. Puzzled, Toad Killer Dog resumed his journey. He came to another place where the Limper had had difficulties. Again he saw a black rider with a fiery spear who hurled his dart to the north. One more repetition, and the monster understood that he was being encouraged to overtake the Limper, that he would be guided to the inevitable confrontation, and that the Limper was being stalled all along his northward journey. What could he do when he caught up? He was no match for that son of the shadow. A black rider sat outside the gate of Beryl.
He threw a blazing spear to the east. Toad Killer Dog turned. He found the trail quickly. So, the old Doom had been forced to take the long road around the sea. He loped on, gaining 2 miles for each 3 he ran. He swam the River Bigotes and the Hyclades and streaked across the 70 silvery miles of lifeless, mirror-flat salt desert called the Ranipur. He raced between the countless burial mounds of Barbara to reach the forgotten highway of La Balarada. He circled the haunted ruins of Kun, past the pyramids of Kach, which still stood sentinel over the canyons of the undead. Wearily, he circled the remnants of the temple city of Marsha the Devastator, where the air still shimmered with the cries of sacrifices whose hearts had been torn out on the altars of an aloof and disdainful goddess. The trail grew warmer by the hour. He came into the province of Karsus, past outposts of the Empire, where auxiliaries recruited from the Orain tribes guarded the frontier against the depredations of their own kind more ferociously and faithfully than did the Imperial legions. A black rider armed with a spear of fire watched them race across the plain of Danopatha, where 100 armies had contested the rites of passage, north or south or east, and where some legends said the last battle of time would be fought between light and darkness. The mountains of Sinjian lay beyond, and in their savage defiles he found evidence that the Limper was again being tormented and delayed, again with vicious traps narrowly escaped. The spoor was heavy and hot, and had the taint of newly opened graves. He came out onto a prominence overlooking the Straits of Angine, where the fresh waters flowed down from the Kiril lakes to meld with the salty waters of the Sea of Torments. His vantage was not far from the narrowest part of the strait that seafarers called Hell's Gate, and overland travelers had dubbed Heaven's Bridge. Hell was in session down there. The Limper was on the south shore and wanted to cross over, but on the north shore, someone demurred. Toad Killer Dog settled on his belly, rested his chin on his forepaws, and watched. This was not the place to reveal himself. Maybe at the tower, if the Limper turned west and sought a vengeance there. As though they sensed his arrival, those who held the north shore closed up shop and hauled out. The Limper hurled glamorous violences after them. The distance was too great to do them any harm. The Limper went across immediately. He encountered traps immediately. Toad Killer Dog decided he would hazard a more difficult crossing. After dark. There was no need to hurry now. He had the quarry in sight. He could bide his time. He might range ahead and lie in wait. Or he might stalk the enemies of his enemy in order to discover the nature of their game. Chapter 50. We got a break. Raven came rolling in where I was reading a book I borrowed from the guy who owned the place where we was staying. We got a break. Come on, Case. I put the book aside, got up. What's happening? I'll tell you on the way. He stuck his head in the next room, yelled and invoked Darling till one of the Torques joined us. We hit the street. He started talking. One of those little characters from the plane hit pay dirt. He overheard a man telling his cronies about an incident that almost has to involve the men who stole the spike. I told him, slow down, you're getting the soldiers interested. And he was. He was that eager to get at this first assignment from Darling. What did the guy say? He and 2 others were hired to snatch a man and then help question him. Which they did. But someone came along and broke it up. This fellow was the only one who got away. We're going to round him up and let him walk us through his adventure. Right. It might be the best lead we'd get, but it didn't look that great to me. This guy is shooting his mouth off about what happened to him. We're going to have to get in line to talk to him. We heard first, almost direct. We're ahead of the pack, but that's why I'm in a hurry. I noticed he was hardly limping. Your hip finally starting to do right? All the sitting around. Nothing else to do but get healthy. Speaking of which, I went out for a beer this afternoon. I heard talk there's cholera down near Southgate. We walked in silence a while. Then the Torque, I still didn't know any of their real front names, said,
"That'll tear it, won't it? Get a cholera outbreak going and the pot will boil over, sure."
Raven grunted. Maybe this wasn't just our best break, but our only one. Maybe we had to make a count. We went into a place with the dumb name Barnacles. Raven looked around. There's our man, right where he's supposed to be. His voice had just got hard as jasper. He had changed while we walked, turned into a critter like the Raven that had ridden with the Black Company. Our man was alone. He was drunk. Fortune was smiling today. Raven told us, "You guys have a beer and keep an eye out. I'll talk to him." We did, and he did. I don't know what he said, but I never got a chance to get even with Torque for having him by the second round. Raven got up. So did our man. In a minute, we were all in the street. It was almost dark out now. Our new friend was not full of small talk. He did not seem pleased to be with us. Raven told us, "Smiley here figured getting 50 obols for showing us around was a lot better than the alternative." Smiley took us to an alley.
"This is where we grabbed the guy."
Raven had asked questions while we walked.
"And you didn't know anything about the guy? Like where he was coming from or where he was headed?"
"I told you this Abel set it up and gave it to Shorts. Shorts just hired me and Tanker to back him up when he grabbed this guy with only one hand that was supposed to come through here. Maybe Shorts knew what was going on, I didn't."
"Convenient."
"Yeah. The more I think about it, the more I figure the only reason they had me and Tanker hang around after we got the guy down to the cellar was they planned on us never leaving if they got what they wanted."
"You're probably right. That's the way those kind work."
"And you guys don't?"
"Not when we get cooperation. Show us that cellar."
I was glum. Our big strike looked like it was turning into a pocket of fool's gold. The guys who could give us answers had checked out. Raven thought we might get something out of a look at the bodies. I was willing to bet all we would get was gagged.
"Shit, this is desolate," I said as we was getting close. "How much farther?"
"About a block."
"Hold it," Raven said. "Quiet."
I listened. I didn't hear nothing. But my eyes were good at night. By looking slightly to the side of them, I could make out some guys. Three of them carrying a fourth. They were headed somewhere in a big hurry. I told Raven. He asked, "You know this area?"
"Only vaguely."
"Try to get ahead of them. They won't be able to move too fast if they're carrying a body. We'll run them down from behind."
Smiley said, "I'll do a fade now."
Raven replied, "You'll come with us and tell us if you recognize any faces." Smiley started cursing. I took off. I figured it was a waste of time, but I'd give it a shot. 5 minutes and I'd be lost, and they'd be long gone. I went about 300 yards and found myself on open ground. It looked like the area where we had landed, seen from a different direction. I couldn't see anyone in the open. Figuring they'd been to my left when I started and I'd paralleled them, I moved to my left, along the face of the ruin still standing. Nothing. 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 Just like I expected. Where were the others? I worried. I thought about yelling, but decided not to. I didn't want to look silly.
I thought I was paying attention, but I guess I wasn't. Somebody stepped out of nowhere and kicked me in the noogies. A perfect shot. The pain exploded through me. I bent over and puked and didn't care about anything else in the world. He hit me in the back of the head. I went down, rooted up a little pavement with my chin. Somebody got onto me and forced me to lay out flat, face down. He was not gentle. I wiggled a couple fingers by way of fighting back. He was not impressed. He twisted one arm up behind me till I thought it was going to break, then whispered in my ear, "I don't want you tromping around in my life, boy. You hear?" I did not answer. He twisted my arm a little more. I let out a yell, proving I was getting my wind back faster than I thought. "You hear me, boy?"
"Yeah."
"Next time I even see you or one of your buddies, they're going to be picking up pieces all over Orr, you understand?"
"Yeah."
"You tell that slit she don't mind her own business. She's going to be up to her twat in Grays. You listening?"
"Yeah."
"Good." He hit me on the head again. I don't know why, maybe because my skull is as thick as my old man used to tell me it was. He didn't put me all the way out. I lay there powerless but aware as he drew a knife across my left cheek. Then he got up and went away. And my only companions were pain, nausea, and humiliation. After a while, I got my feet under me and stumbled off to find Raven. I hadn't been whipped up on so bad since I was a kid. The slash burned like hell, but wasn't as bad as I'd feared. I actually found them pretty easy, considering. Only took me about 15 minutes. There was a little light now from a big fire burning down south. Later, I found out they were getting rid of the bodies of the first 100 people to die from the cholera. The twins must have anticipated epidemics. They'd had the engineers save all the scrap lumber from the demolished buildings. I stumbled over Raven is how I found him. He was out cold. He had a slash just like mine. The torque was about 10 feet away and just starting to twitch and make noises. He had been cut too. So had Smiley. Twice. The second cut was about 4 inches below the first, ran from ear to ear, and was the last wound he'd ever suffer. They'd done a number on us, all right. Raven hadn't gotten him a swift kick, but a good whack on the head. He was still rocky, as we reported. His hand shook badly as he tried to sign to Darlin. "One man, I think. Took us by surprise." He was embarrassed. I don't think I ever saw him embarrassed like that before. But he never got took like that before, either. I was embarrassed when my turn came because I had to report every word the man had said. I was afraid I was going to have to explain a couple of them. She surprised me, for the 100th time, by not being as ignorant as I expected. Silent touched his cheek. Signed, Queensbridge. Darling nodded. I had to ask. Silent signed. "When we fought the Night Stalkers at Queensbridge, they took 18 prisoners. They marked them all on the left cheek and turned them loose." What the hell? Could the soldiers themselves have the spike? Is that why they haven't had any luck finding it? Is the Brigadier playing some game of her own? I did it inside. You get into the habit when you're around Darling long. She looked at me weird for a few seconds, then signed, "We have to get out of here now. Soldiers, not Night Stalkers, are going to come any minute." I saw it then. Somebody was a mad genius, a wizard at thinking on his feet. In the minutes he'd had us at his mercy, he'd put together a plan that could hurl Orr into a whirlpool of chaos and violence. He had spared us, only to spark a greater bloodletting.
The twin soldiers would grab us with the marks on us and eliminate the White Rose menace. Word would get out. A significant portion of the population would start raising hell. Meantime, the twins would take our testimony on the rack and find cause to suspect the Night Stalkers and their commander. There was no love lost there now, and there was no way the Night Stalkers were going to let their brigadier be arrested or even relieved of her command. The Night Stalkers were outnumbered by the other gray regiments, but they were the better, tougher soldiers, and they would win in any confrontation unless the twins themselves intervened directly. Bloody-minded genius. Who could keep his or her mind on the silver spike with all that shit going on? While I was thinking, Darlin was flinging orders left and right. She sent all the little plane creatures out to scout around and see who was in the neighborhood and to watch for soldiers. She sent the Torque brothers off to warn our rebel friends. Bowman's and Silent she sent to the area where we got bushwhacked to see if they, with their talents, could pick up anything. She looked from me to Raven and back again, deciding who should be their guide. She picked Raven. Before they could all work up a good scowl for me, I think Silent was pleased that he would not be leaving her alone with Raven. One of the plane creatures zipped in to report the area clear, except for an antiquated wino passed out on the wooden sidewalk half a block away. Darling signed, "Let us go now." We all went. The wave of raids and arrests started less than half an hour later. Chapter 51. Smeds looked at Tully across the little table. His cousin was drinking with a grim determination, but he was still stone-cold sober. Those bodies. Gruesome. Those men chasing them through the night. Those fires in the south, where they were burning the bodies of cholera victims. Now, they were bands of soldiers tramping through the streets about some nocturnal business that had set the rumors flying. It was not a time to inspire confidence in one's security. The soldiers, some of them, were troubled too. Moments before, several Night Stalkers had come in to consult the resident corporal. Now the whole bunch was headed out. They looked like they expected bad trouble.
"It's starting to come apart," Smed said. He felt breathless.
Shivering, Tully nodded.
"If I knew what we were going to go through, I would have said screw the spike." The big hit man. I guess, when you think about it, it wasn't never that easy for nobody that ever made it. Yeah. What I did, I never thought it through. Or I would have figured the world would go crazy. I would have figured there'd be just a whole mob of them who'd kill anybody and do anything to get a hold of it. What the hell is wrong with this beer? It's got a kick like a mouse.
Enjoy it.
Fish appeared out of nowhere. He had a haggard, harried look. He joined them. It might be the last beer in town. He slumped, wrung out.
"I've done what I can. All we can do is wait. And hope."
Smets asked,
"What's going on out there? With the soldiers?"
"They're rounding out rebels. They're going to execute a big bunch in the morning. That ought to set off the explosion that will break the city wide open."
"What if it don't?"
Tully asked.
"Then we're screwed. Sooner or later they'll get us. Process of elimination."
Fish stole a sip of Smed's beer.
"Cheer up. They're between us and the cholera. Maybe it'll get them before they get us."
"Shit.
We gotta get some sleep."
"You're kidding?"
"We ought to try. We ought at least to get out of sight. Out of sight, out of mind, as they say.
Smets fell asleep in about 2 minutes. He was not sure what wakened him. The sun was up. So were Tully and Fish. Up and out of there. Something made him start shivering. He went to the common room. It was empty. It hit him as he crossed to the door. The silence. The morning was as still as the grave. But for his footsteps, he would have feared he was deaf. The door groaned as he opened it. Everyone stood in the street, looking toward the center of ore, waiting for something. The wait was short. Smets felt it in the earth before it reached his ears. A monster vibration pursued by an avalanche of rage. A roar, almost like a blow. Fish told him. They started the executions. I was afraid they would chicken out. The roar grew louder, rolled closer, as an entire city, in a moment, decided that it had had enough of tyranny and oppression. The wave came into the street outside the Skull and Crossbones. The people reeled with it. Then mothers began herding children inside. Men began moving towards city center in a rage for death. Few of them armed, because the repeated searches by the Greys had turned up most of the privately held weapons. They had confiscated everything but the personal knife. Smets decided he must be getting old and cynical. He hadn't the slightest urge to get involved. Neither did Fish. Tully twitched for a moment, then stood fast. Many of the men in the street did the same. The rage was like the cholera. Not everyone had it yet. But both would claim many more before they subsided. Fish got Smets and Tully inside the Skull and Crossbones and sat them down. We don't move. We let the rumors come to us. If they turn favorable enough, we'll head for the wall whenever it looks like we've got a chance to get out. Smets, go put yourself a pack together, stuff you'll need to travel. Tully whispered,
What about the spike?
It can take care of itself.
Where the hell is it anyway?
Smets, go pack. I don't know, Tully. I don't want to know. All I care is Smets found a place so good nobody else has found it.
Smets felt Tully's angry stare as he moved away. The first flurry of rumors spoke more eloquently of human savagery than it did of human nobility. Despite knowing the mob was in an ugly mood, the regiment handling the executions had been caught off balance by the violence of the outburst following the first execution. They were swamped by the responding fury. 800 died before panicky reinforcements, in no good order, arrived. Several thousand civilians and several hundred more soldiers died before it broke up. The fleeing citizens took a fair supply of arms with them. Small to medium-sized riots bubbled up all over Orr, anywhere the Greys appeared weak. A mob tried to storm the civil palace. They were driven off, but they left several fires burning, the worst of which raged out of control for hours. A huge mob attacked the regiment that had moved in to beef up protection of the Southgate. Many captured weapons surfaced there. The mob overwhelmed the regiment, but failed to flush the gate guards and failed to take the top of the wall. Archers posted there soon dispersed them. Fish did not let Tully or Smeds go out once. Come nightfall, the situation grew both more chaotic and more sinister. The hard-pressed soldiers began to lose discipline, to indulge in indiscriminate slaughter. Youths got out and set fires. Vandalized, looted. Individuals pursued private feuds, and the world's densest population of wizards decided to become involved. Decided to gang up and eliminate their toughest competitor. They rallied a mob and went after Gossamer and Spider Silk. This time, the attackers broke through. They exterminated the bodyguard force. One of the twins was injured, maybe killed. The entire center of the city seemed to be afire, and total madness spread with the news. It got so it seemed everyone in the city was trying to murder someone else. The crowd of wizards turned on one another. Chaos had not trespassed much in the neighborhood of the Skull and Crossbones earlier, but now it came creeping in with a crash and a clash and a scream. Smed said,
"We gotta get out of here."
Fish surprised him by agreeing. "You're right. Before it gets impossible, let's grab our stuff." Tully was too worn out to do anything but go along. The other hangers-on watched them dully as they slipped out. Half an hour later, without serious misadventure, they had established themselves in the dark murk of a partly collapsed basement, barely 100 yards from the place where Timmy Loken had died. The madness had no hunger for that part of ore, already gnawed to the bone by the Limper's passage. Chapter 52. Bowmans was bad worried.
"There's no limit to the insanity out there. If they keep on, they'll continue till there's only one man left standing."
Raven cracked.
"Let's make sure that's us."
We had hidden ourselves in the bell tower of an old temple less than a bow shot from the civil palace. If I wanted, I could peek out and watch the place burn. We didn't let anybody know we were going to hide out. So far, thanks to the old wizard, nobody had tripped over us.
"You think it's the spike's fault?" I asked.
"It's influence.
And the more evil done around it, the thicker the miasma of madness will get."
"So why weren't we busting our knuckles on somebody?"
Darlin was upset about what was happening. Far as I could tell, she was the only one. The rest of us was just scared of it. Just wanted to stay out of the way till it burned itself out. She would have done something if she could. I asked, "So what are we going to do? Sit?" I was thinking how the craziness must have ruined the quarantine on the cholera area.
"You got a better idea?" Raven asked.
"No."
Them that had gone out looking the other night hadn't found nothing. Only good thing turned out to be I got to spend a couple hours talking to Darlin without Silent and Raven giving me the evil eye.
But I feel like the buzzard who got so tired of waiting for something to die, he went to thinking about killing something.
Bowman said, "We need to decide what to do if there's a breakout. You can bet if there is, the people who know about the spike will be the first ones gone. Everyone will know if it starts moving, won't they?"
"They wouldn't move it."
"Why should they?
It's safe. Or somebody would have found it.
They'll just be worried about staying alive till they can sell it."
"What makes you think they want to sell?" I asked.
"If they could use it, they would have."
"Made sense. That's the way bandits would work.
So why haven't they tried to hawk it?"
"Because all these assholes here think they can take it away from them and outrun each other."
I decided to take a nap. Talk was getting us nowhere. We weren't doing nothing but yak and waiting the plane critters to drop by with reports. When the spirit moved them. They don't think like us. Some got no sense of time at all. Which is maybe why Donkey Torque sounded so damn surprised after he took a look outside.
"You guys better take a gander here."
We crowded around him. We had us a whole new angle on all our troubles. Everybody did. A new gang had come to town. The black coach had just rolled into the square in front of the civil palace. 4 black horses pulled it. 6 black riders on 6 black horses surrounded it. An infantry battalion followed. Surprise. Those boys were all dutied up in black. Where the hell did they come from? I muttered. Raven said, "You got your wish, wizard."
"Huh?"
"The tower has taken an interest." I felt a hand on my shoulder. "Darlin'." I scrunched over so she could get up beside me and see. She left her hand where it was. "You can guess how many friends that made me." "Someone got out of the coach. No black for this clown." "A popinjay," Bowman said. "And me, I always wondered what that meant." The peacock looked around at the bodies, at the remains of the palace, said something to one of his outriders. The horseman rode up the steps and into the unburned part of the building. A minute later, people started tumbling out. The other riders herded them together, facing the clown. Gossamer and Spider Silk came out. A rider chivied them toward his boss.
"Called on the carpet," Bowman said. "Be interesting to hear that."
There wasn't no doubt who was senior to who down there. The twins did everything but get down on their bellies. A back and forth went on for maybe 10 minutes. Then the twins started sending their people scurrying off.
"What now?" Raven muttered.
Next thing the peacock did was set up housekeeping in the only undamaged building in the neighborhood. The temple. Downstairs. We was stuck. People started coming to see the new Nabob. Brigadier Wildbrand was one of the first. The Night Stalkers had not been involved in any of the fighting so far. The chaos died away for a few hours while the madmen of war digested the news about the new boy in town. Then it blazed up, white hot. But it died out, spent, before sundown. We got the word well after dark, knew why it had gotten quiet. The limper was headed for ore, bent on grabbing the silver spike. Ore was not going to let him have it. According to Exile, the new man from the tower.
"Shit,"
I muttered. "That limper has more lives than a cat."
"I knew we should have made sure of him," Raven growled.
He glared at Darling. Her fault. She had been so sure, she had seen no need to argue with the tree god. Exile had orders to hold ore and destroy the limper. Our spy said he meant to do that if it cost every life in the city. Shit. The tower would have to send some guy who took his job serious. Chapter 53. Smedge woke first. Before he had his wits in hand, he knew there was something wrong. Tully was gone. Maybe he had to go take a leak. Smedge scrambled out into the unexpected brightness of morning. No sign of Tully. But the nearby street, unused in recent times, was choked with traffic. Every vehicle carried corpses. Smedge gaped. Then he ducked back down into the ruined cellar and found Fish, shook him till he growled, "What the hell is the matter?"
"Tully's gone, and you gotta see what's outside to believe it."
"That idiot."
Fish was wide awake now. "All right. Get your shit. We gotta move just so he don't know where to find us."
"Huh?"
"I've run out of trust for Cousin Tully Smits. I want to know where he is, not the other way around. A man who can lose a fortune the way he did, that's stupid to the point of being suicidal. A man who gets over a fit of common sense as fast as he did and goes sneaking off with this city the way it is, I'm pretty close to the end of my patience. Every stunt he pulls puts us all at risk. If he screwed up, I don't know."
"Go look outside."
Fish went.
"Damn," he came back.
"We have to find out what's happening."
"That's obvious. They're using that landfill to dump bodies from the riots."
"You missed the point.
Who thought that up and got all those people to work on it? When we crawled in here, they were trying to rip each other's throats out.
They soon discovered that the chaos had not so much died as gone into momentary remission, and not universally. There were hot spots, most surrounding wizards, reluctant to embrace a new order that had come in overnight. The twins from Charm were out and somebody called Exile was in. An ore was supposed to be girding for another visit from the Limper.
Things are getting crazy, Smed said as they approached the Skull and Crossbones.
There's an understatement, if ever I heard one. Their landlord seemed disappointed that they hadn't been killed in the riots. No, he hadn't seen Tully since he'd wanted breakfast and had stormed out because he couldn't get credit. Wasn't anything to fix, anyway.
You got nothing? Smeds asked.
I got a dried-out third of a loaf I'm gonna soak in water and have for supper. You want to dig around in the cellar, you might find a couple of rats. I'll roast them up for you.
Smeds believed him. Tully didn't happen to say where he was headed, did he?
No.
He turned right when he left out.
Thanks, Fish said.
He started toward the street.
The landlord asked, You heard about the reward?
What reward?
Smeds asked. For that silver spike thing all the commotion's supposed to be about. The new guy says he'll give 100,000 nobles, no questions asked, no tricks, no risks. Just take it in and get the money.
Damn-o, Fish said. A guy could live pretty good, couldn't he? Wish to hell I had it.
Smeds grumbled. You was to ask me, there ain't no such thing. All them witches and wizards would have found it if there was. Come on, Fish. I gotta find that shithead cousin of mine.
Outside, Fish asked, You think he'd try something?
Yeah, if he heard.
He'd figure we deserve to get screwed on account of we've been treating him so bad. Only he don't know where it's at.
So he'll have to make up his mind if he can sell me to the torturers.
I think he can. Without remorse. There isn't really anyone in this world who really matters except Tully Stahl. He probably started out just figuring to use us, then get rid of us one by one. Only things didn't go as simple as he thought they would.
You're maybe right, Smeds admitted. Guess we got to assume he's going to sell us out, don't we?
We'd be fools to give him the benefit of the doubt. You know his habits and hangouts. Look for him. I'll find out where Exile holds up and wait for him to show up there.
What if he's already?
Then we're screwed, aren't we?
Yeah. Hey, what about we sell this guy the spike? 100,000 ain't bad. I can't even count that high.
It's good. But if the situation is what they say, the Limper coming back, they'll go way higher. Let's let it ride a couple days.
Smeds did not argue, but thought they ought to get what they could while they could get it.
I'll catch up if I can't find him. Fish grunted and walked off.
Smeds began his rounds. He crossed Tully's trail several times. The spike was all the talk everywhere he went. Tully had to know about the reward.
He wasn't running to Exile. That was a good sign. Except that a dozen independents had let out that they would go higher than Exile. A witch named T-Bank had offered 150,000. Smeds believed none of them except Exile. He had seen them when the hunt had been a race between thieves. They wouldn't change. They would talk mountains of obols, but the payoff, when it came, would be death.
But Tully had that knack for deceiving himself. He might decide they were legitimately offering, or he might fool himself into thinking he could outwit them. He had an inflated opinion of his own guile.
Smed soon concluded that the pattern of Tully's movements indicated he was looking for someone, likely one of those fabulous purses. He had no regard left for his cousin. The evidence suggested Tully was gaining no ground on his quarry. Smed's was, though. He wondered if Tully was getting nervous, knowing they would be after him as soon as they knew he was gone. Probably. Smed's caught up, but the situation was not suited to the confrontation he had been rehearsing for hours. He was moving along a street, unnaturally quiet even for after the riots, getting nervous about that, when Tully came flying out a doorway 100 feet ahead and across the way. He hadn't yet gotten stable on his hands and knees when soldiers in black surrounded him. They bound his hands behind him, put a choke cord on him, and led him off toward the center of town. There were 6 of those soldiers. Smed stared numbly, seeing the end of his days. What the hell could he do? Get fish? But what could fish do? No 2 men were ever going to ambush 6 soldiers in broad daylight. He tripped along behind. With each step, he became more certain what had to be done, became more sick at heart. No matter that Tully had been ready to write him off. He ducked into an alley and ran, the energy starting to burn in his veins. He went faster than necessary, trying to leech the growing fear in frenzied physical activity. His pack hammered against his back. Like half the men in Orr, he was carrying his home on his back. He had to get rid of it somehow. Somewhere safe. Most of his take from the Barrowland was in it. He came on a pile of rubble in deep shadow. No one was around. He buried the pack hastily, hurried on to the point where he wanted to intercept Tully and the soldiers. They were not in sight. His heart sank. Had they decided to go some longer way? No, there they were. He'd just gotten way ahead. He crossed the street to a dark alley mouth. He would run back the way he had come, to his pack, through some useful shadows, on a route barren of witnesses. The wait stretched interminably. He had time to get scared again. To talk himself into freezing up. Almost. Then they were there. A pair of soldiers out front, a pair behind, one leading Tully by the choke cord, and one behind to poke him if he slowed down. Smets's knife slipped into his hand. It was the knife he'd taken off that man in that cellar. He flung himself forward, running hard. They barely had time to turn and see him coming. Tully's eyes got huge as he saw the knife come to his throat. Smeds hit the choke cord and smashed through, and in a moment was back in shadows clutching a knife that dripped family blood. Soldiers shouted, feet pounded after him. There was very little physical or emotional reaction. His mind turned to the pursuit. 2 men, he decided. Very determined bastards, too. He wasn't gaining on them. He did not want to deal with them, but it looked like they might give him no choice. He knew the place. It was only a few yards from where he had hidden his pack, where the alley was darkest. He would use the trick the position had tried. If they went on by, he would sneak away behind them. He was amazed at himself. Smed Stahl, scared, could still think. He slipped into a crack in a brick wall that probably was a legacy of the Limpers' visit. It had been improved upon by someone who had used it to get into the building, a thief or squatters. He could slide through and get away, but something that was not concerned for his pack stayed him. He picked up a broken board and waited. They did not continue their headlong rush once his footsteps stopped. They exchanged breathless words in an unfamiliar language. Smeds grew tense. If they stuck together. He still had the out through the building. One soldier put on a burst that took him 100 feet past Smeds. He called to the other. They began moving toward one another. the one who had not run was much closer. He did not notice the gap in the wall till Smeds popped out behind his knife. He made one strange noise, surprise that turned to pain. Smeds tried to pull the knife free as the man fell and the other soldier yelled. It would not come. God damn it, again! Feet pounded toward him. He grabbed his board and swung it just as the other soldier arrived. The impact slammed the man against the wall. Smeds hit him again and again and again, feeling bones crunch till the broken thing stopped whimpering. He stood there panting, unaware that he was grinning, till he heard more men coming. He darted toward where his pack lay, realized he did not have time to dig it out, darted back, and tried the knife again. It would not come. Still. Then he was out of time before he could appropriate a weapon from one of the dead men. He slithered through the crack into the darkness inside the building. Moments later, there was an outraged roar from the alleyway. Smeds kept his head down as he stepped into the street. There was little foot traffic. No one paid him any mind. He set off at a brisk pace, but not one so fast it would attract attention. What now? He didn't dare go find Fish. Some damned soldier might recognize him. But Fish would hear about Tully. Fish would understand. Best thing would be to go back to the Skull and Crossbones and wait. Fish was sure to check there. As his heartbeat slowed toward normal, he became aware of the hollow in his stomach. He had not eaten since yesterday. The Skull and Crossbones was dry. Where could he find something? With stores getting low, nobody might be willing to sell. It was a meal, of sorts. A bowl of bad soup and a chunk of stale bread, and the fat old geek who ran the filthy place hadn't tried to rob him. He was nearly done when a kid blew in, yelled, "Run, Mr. Press Gang!" and sailed out the back.
What the hell?
Press Gang, the greasy fat man said.
Round here the Greys been grabbing all the young men they can find.
Two Greys stamped in. One grinned and said, "Here's a likely-looking patriot." Smeds sneered and went back to work on his meal. He did not feel troubled. A wooden truncheon tapped him on the shoulder.
"Come along, then."
"You better hope there's no splinters in that thing. You touch me again, I'm going to shove it up your ass."
"Oh, a tough one, Cord. We like them tough, don't we? What's your name, boy?"
Smith sighed, hearing the voices of all the bullies who'd ever baited him. He turned, looked the soldier in the eye, said,
"Death."
Maybe the man saw seven murders in his eyes. He backed off a step. Smets decided the one who kept his mouth shut was probably more dangerous. He felt no fear at all. In fact, he felt invulnerable, invincible. He rose slowly, flipped his bread into the talker's face, kicked him in the groin. A bully had done that to him once. He shoved his chair at the other man's legs, and while he was dealing with that, shoved his soup into the man's face. Then he grabbed the truncheon away from the first and went to work. He might have killed them both if half a dozen more soldiers had not showed up to help. They didn't beat Smeds much more than they had to get him under control. They seemed to think the whole thing was a good joke on the man with the big mouth. They dragged Smeds outside and added him to a group of cowed youngsters about 30 strong. Several of the youngsters got told off to carry the men Smeds had injured. So, Smed Stahl became one of the Gray Boys. Sort of. Chapter 54. The little critters was in and out so much, I was sure the people downstairs was going to find us out any minute. Bowman and Silent was having trouble enough keeping curiosity types away without attracting the attention of the new big boy. Raven was loving every minute of it. "What the hell are you grinning about?" I demanded.
Those guys with the spike. They got balls down to their ankles.
Huh.
He would appreciate their brass. Come on, Case. Look. One of them decides to cut a deal for himself and winds up getting grabbed by Exile's boys for his trouble. So what do his buddies do? Big rescue attempt against the odds? Hell no. Before they get the guy halfway here, one man just casually trots through the escort and practically lops the guy's head off. He does it so quick, they can't get two descriptions that agree no matter how many witnesses they ask. And when the soldiers get riled and go after the killer, he offs two of them and leaves the rest standing around with their thumbs in their ears. Just your kind of fun-loving boy, eh? They have style, Case. I appreciate style. It's a sort of bringing of artistry to even the most mundane or gruesome things that have to be done. Bet you something. If the man who made that hit had had 5 more minutes, he would have been wearing a Night Stalker uniform, just to mess with people's minds. It's not the deed. It's how it was done. Here was a shade of the Raven of old. Maybe the shell was ready to break. You think these guys are just having a good time, sticking their tongues out at the world, yelling, "Catch us if you can"? No, you don't understand. They're probably hiding out somewhere not fit for a pig. They're probably hungry, filthy, scared. Sure, they're not going to get out of it alive. But they're not letting it break them. They're going right on, clawing at the faces of the wolves and vampires trying to feed on them. You see? I agreed, mostly because I didn't. And if I admitted that, we'd end up spending the whole day getting me lessons and never surrender, even if the ground you're holding springs from stupid or wrong. Agreeing worked. He moved over and got into a discussion with Silent and Darlin. All business, I assume, since no sparks flew. I got into a conversation with Bowmans, who was trying to work his way through some moral catch-trap where the spike was concerned. He had some questions that nobody had answers for. I wasn't sure there were any answers. That spike was like a drop of black dye plunked into a pool of already murky water. Spreading. It had poisoned ore already. We had resisted it because we knew about it and could think it away consciously. But what would happen if our bunch got lucky and glommed onto it? Scary. And what the hell were we going to do with the damned thing if we did get it? I never heard none of those clowns talk about that. It was all keep the other guys from grabbing it and doing dirty. It sure as hell hadn't been safe where they left it before. I didn't have no ideas. Not that looked like they would work. There wasn't no place in the world you could put it that somebody else couldn't get it back from, except maybe if you dropped it in the deepest part of the ocean. And that probably wouldn't do the job neither. Some damned fish would probably gulp it down before it sank 10 feet. Then the fish would beach itself or get hooked by some goddamned fisherman with a hidden talent for sorcery and a secret lust for conquest. That's the nature of evil talismans. My best notions were to get a bunch of sorcerers together who could elevate it to the outer realm and stick it on a passing comet, or to have a bunch break a little hole through to another plane, pop the spike through and plug